Ken Cuccinelli is the former Attorney General of Virginia, and he's the director of the Senate Conservatives Fund. He joins us now this morning to talk to us about something that's, you know, kind of been a second-tier story, I think, in political circles. This idea of criminal justice reform, which appears to have stalled in the Senate. Ken, I'm glad to have you here. What's actually in this bill, and are conservatives for it or against it?
Yes.
Both?
Yes. I belong to Right on Crime, which is a group of conservatives that work on evidence-based criminal justice reform. And that has gone forward very effectively in states that run by Republicans. Mm-hmm. And it began in Texas. So it's not like anybody's going to accuse Texas of being soft on crime.
Right.
It's still a hang-'em-high state, and yet they have reduced crime and reduced their prison budget at the same time by reducing recidivism and returns to crime by people in their jails.
Is it a question of identifying? Is it a question of identifying the people who are currently incarcerated who are least likely to commit again and expediting their departure? That seems like a slippery slope.
We don't expedite their departure. You make more use of their time there.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Which is what the First Step Act does, is it focuses on rehabilitation and vocational efforts that have been proven in the state, so they're evidence-based, to reduce recidivism. And the way they do it is they overcome the main hurdles of a convict coming out, of getting a job, being employable, and being able to actually have something to contribute to society when you get back out. And 95% of the people in our prisons are coming back out with all the money we spend on warehousing them. We should want them to come out better than they went in. And frankly, as a simple investor, as a taxpayer, it's unfair if it doesn't happen. And that's what this bill focuses on first and foremost.
So who would benefit from this if they were incarcerated? I assume we're not talking about violent criminals, especially with the long history of crime.
No, we're talking about, and I'm using very rough estimates here, but we're talking about the lower half of the federal prison population. So nonviolent offenders are the easiest way to think about it. But they have to go and actually do things. They have to take steps to prepare themselves for employment after they leave to qualify. And none of these folks are released early because of these qualifications. What they do get is they get moved into pre-release custody sooner. So, for instance, you can go from, if you're an inmate, from low security prison to a halfway house sooner based on earning what are called earned time credits by undertaking and successfully completing vocational and educational training of various types. Again, an evidence-based approach that's been proven in the states. And I actually had one person who doesn't like doing anything that might help people in prison at all, even if it increases public safety, say, well, but federal prisoners are different than state prisoners. Really? 90% of the prisoners in this country are in state prisons. 10% are in federal custody. It's about 200,000 people. We spend an enormous portion of the Department of Justice budget on these folks, and we're not getting as good a return for that money as we could get. Does it keep us safe to keep some of these folks in prison? Absolutely. Should we want to focus our money on the people we're afraid of, not mad at? Absolutely. And this is a way to do that.
Forgive me for saying this, but my impression of you is that you were always very hardcore on criminals.
Absolutely.
So when my producer said that you were booked on this, I didn't know which direction you were going to go on it. Why is this one of the agenda items that you're focusing on?
Well, I think this coalition I'm part of among conservatives is well named Right on Crime. Mm-hmm. We're all conservative, but we're also evidence-based. We're data-focused. And the states came to this, and this may make it make a lot more sense. The states all came to this first because of budget limits. Mm-hmm. Unlike the federal government, they don't print money, right?
Right, yeah.
So they actually have to balance their budgets. And short only of Medicaid's explosive growth, prisons represent one of the most difficult to control parts of state budgets. And so this actually began with Governor Rick Perry telling some of his legislators, find me a way to save money here, to spend less here. And the obvious way to do that is to reduce crime. Mm-hmm. And the only part of it that you really control without getting soft on crime is the prisoners already in your custody.
Yeah.
So how can you make them less likely to return to crime? And that set of inquiries is what began this 11 years ago. And again, we've proven it in the states. And conservatives who believe both in being tough on crime, I still have the longest gang sentence in the history of Virginia, which was life plus longer than America's life. It was like 247 years.
Mm-hmm.
And very proud of being tough on crime where that's most appropriate, but also don't want to just warehouse people and take up bed space for people like gang members and sex offenders and so forth that we really need to spend our money keeping in jail.
And then wind up with people who could actually find jobs not being able to do that. Real quick, in the last 15 seconds, does this pass the Senate anytime soon?
Well, it's going to have to pass in the next couple of weeks. And the big debate right now really is whether Senator McConnell will bring it to the floor or not. The combined count of votes between Democrats and Republicans is more than enough to get back past a filibuster, not merely pass the bill, but get past a 60-vote threshold. Mm-hmm. This has been passed on a bipartisan basis. In the House, it came out of the House with only two Republicans voting against it.
Yeah.
And now they've added some sentencing elements, small ones in the Senate, because that's what the coalition over there requires.
Right.
But they're very small. One comes out of Jim Webb's former bill, which was the not equalization, but moving in the direction of equalization of crack and cocaine sentences, which is a big deal to
Democrats.
The black community.
Yeah.
Well, and one part of it, and there was a time when crack spawned tremendous violence in this country. And,
right.
That has not been the case so much lately. What you hear about now is opioids, fentanyl, heroin, and so forth. And we have seen with the 2010 bill that was passed that there has not been a difference almost to the 0.1% in recidivism among those who qualified under that bill versus those who didn't. So they did that right.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing the data because, you know, one of the concerns I think a lot of people have is about the emotion versus the data. So if it's data-based, that's
absolutely
helpful. Ken Cuccinelli, the former Attorney General of Virginia, director of the Senate Conservatives Fund, appreciate that explanation so that we'll know what's happening over the next few weeks. Thank you, sir.